This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
There's something in all of us that longs for a deeper connection to the world. And so when people like me or anybody else uses words like purpose and meaning, there's something in just about everybody that perks up and goes, yes, that's what I want. But unfortunately, most people are understanding that in an early adolescent way, but still, it speaks to us.
Webster defines adolescence as the state or process of growing up. As a species, we may be smack dab in the middle of our collective adolescence. This week on Sea Change Radio, we take a breath to learn a bit about ourselves from Bill Plotkin, an author, psychologist, and spiritual ecologist. We dive into Plotkin's teachings, outlined in his new book, The Journey of Soul Initiation, about moving from adolescence into adulthood, both metaphorically and figuratively, and how we can all evolve as individuals to become better stewards of the planet. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Bill Plotkin. He is a soul initiation guide and an author, and his new book is called The Journey of Soul Initiation. Bill, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex. Great to be here.
So you are a soul initiation guide. I believe you are perhaps the first soul initiation guide we've had on Sea Change Radio. Tell us what a soul initiation guide does, and it's right there in the title of your book. Why don't you fold that answer into why your book is entitled The Journey of Soul Initiation.
A soul initiation guide guides the journey of soul initiation. And that journey is the process which leads to true adulthood. And the problem in understanding that right away is that what I mean by true adulthood is something that isn't at all on the map of Western culture. And it's relatively rare to have true adults in the contemporary Western world, not to mention elders. And the absence of true adults or soul-initiated adults is, I believe, at the root of every single crisis we have in the world today. So the absence of that process, that journey of soul initiation, is a serious problem. It's a journey that we find in healthy cultures all over the world, although there aren't too many left because of the unhealthy cultures. But to get to a sustainable, livable future, that's one of the things we're going to need, is to rediscover and re-envision the journey of soul initiation.
So can you define the idea of soul in your work?
Yeah, that's a really important question, because like so many of the primary concepts I use, I mean something radically different than what we have in the Western world. So, for example, it took me a few decades to realize that the psychological and spiritual and religious definitions of soul weren't particularly useful to me at all, and they weren't relevant to the process that I was learning how to guide for myself and others. In particular, I discovered that soul, to make sense of that word, that concept, we really have to understand it ecologically. So for me, it's soul is an ecological concept, and what I mean by it is a thing's unique ecological niche, the particular singular place that an individual of any species was born to take in its ecosystem. And a niche, of course, is the full set of relationships that an individual has with everything else in its environment. So the idea, Alex, is that everything is born to take a particular place in the world. And that's the way everything contributes to life, because life is not meant to be merely sustainable. It's meant to be enhancement of life. Everything, when we look in the world today, and we look at all the other species, We're aware that every other species contributes to life in such a way that it enhances the life on the planet. But we look at our species and we realize, wait a minute, something's going very wrong. We're not only not life-enhancing, we're not even life-sustaining, and we're quickly on this road to destroying much of the life on this planet. And I believe that's, again, because we've lost this journey of soul initiation. We've lost most of the true adults and elders. And psycho-spiritually and socially, there's been a great decay in our contemporary cultures, even while we advance magnificently in other ways, like in the sciences, technology, and the arts.
So you talk about the role of humans on Earth as our place in a community, on the Earth community, and that's and you differentiate that from ecological perspective. Why don't you kind of expand on that idea if you can?
Yeah, this is part of one of the larger maps we work with, which is a developmental wheel that is a description of the eight stages of human development if we were to grow as nature and soul would have it be. And that's in my book, Nature and the Human Soul, an earlier book. And in that book, I explain that it looks like of the eight stages, eight soul-centric stages of human life, we contemporary humans get stuck in the third stage and never grow past it. Too many of us, probably 80 or 90% get stuck in that third stage, which is early adolescence. I'm not talking about our early teen years. I'm talking about a psychological stage that starts at puberty and doesn't necessarily end, and doesn't end if we get stuck in it. And in early adolescence, our life is all about our social relationships and our job and our identity in terms of our vocation or our creative projects or our social roles. And that's a healthy thing for an early adolescent, to create a social presence that is both authentic in terms of, you know, living out our values and our true emotions and so on, our interests, and also socially acceptable. But too many people these days have trouble with that task and get stuck in that stage, largely because of developmental problems in childhood. Again, because of the kind of culture, that egocentric culture we live in. So in early adolescence, we tend to identify ourselves and understand ourselves and experience ourselves in terms of our social roles and our jobs or careers. But when we go through the journey of soul initiation, which again is something that all healthy cultures have in one form or another, when we go through that and become initiated, then we understand ourselves as having an identity that is defined within the more than human world, within the larger Earth community, within the greater web of life. And that is our deepest loyalty to the unique way that we can enhance life. So when people these days tend to think about individual purpose or meaning, which there's such a great longing for that, they tend to think about it in adolescent ways, which is not a criticism because most people are in that adolescent stage. But I'm hoping our listeners can begin to get this sense that there's a deeper kind of meaning, I call it soul purpose, that cannot be defined in terms of a job or a social role, but only can be defined ecologically. And the way we experience that is not literally in ecological terms, but our human consciousness experiences our unique ecological niche in terms, well, metaphorically, in terms of a symbol or an image or an archetype or like a poem or a dance. So what happens during the journey of soul initiation, if it's successful, and in particular during one episode of the journey, which we call the descent to soul, during that journey we have an experience called, during the descent, we have an experience called the soul encounter. And during that experience, what we encounter is some metaphor. We call it a mythopoetic image, and it communicates to us metaphorically what our ecological place is. I'll give a quick example with me. It's, of course, a very long story how I ended up getting there, but it was on the fourth day of my first vision fast. Not that a vision fast is at all necessary to have this kind of experience, but it's how it worked out for me. I had on that fourth day of fasting high in the mountains of Colorado, I had an interaction with a spruce tree and a butterfly, which to some listeners that might sound kind of an odd kind of experience, but trust me that after 4 days of fasting, and if you're in the stage of life in which the journey of soul initiation happens, this is quite common. And during that interaction, the butterfly flew to me, brushed one of her wings against my side of my face as she went by, and I heard in English the word cocoon weaver. And I had no idea what that meant, but within a few seconds, something in me got it emotionally that I had just been shown something about what my purpose in life would be, that it wasn't to be a psychologist or a vision fast guide or an author or any of the other social roles or vocational roles I've inhabited, but whatever I was going to do, it was only successful if I was weaving cocoons, which is to say, to support others to create context for themselves within which they can go through this journey of soul initiation.
Thirsty at the fountain, no water there can slake. Dance round in the ring again, forgive the new mistake. Conscious of my cheeseburger, most mindful of my shake. Suddenly I hear my intuition start to quake, so I wash it down, wash it down, wash it down. When the reader is the poem, then just leave love alone. In a wink of eternity, I find myself a home. Better be my own circumstance to the unknown. Suddenly I hear my intuition start to groan, and I wash it down, wash it down, wash it down.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to author Bill Plotkin. His book is called The Journey of Soul Initiation. So, Bill, you were talking about how so many of us are still in an adolescent stage, and one of the missions of your book is to help people to evolve into adulthood. Would it be fair to make this analogy when we're talking about one's transition from adolescence to adulthood and our stewardship of the earth? Is that two of the most important aspects of becoming an adult and also becoming a good steward of the planet is to practice patience and to listen? You were talking about communicating with the spruce tree and a butterfly. A lot of that is from being quiet, patient, and listening. What other kind of traits do we need to kind of make that transition into adulthood and to be better stewards of the earth?
Well, the first thing is that we have to get from what I consider early adolescence to late adolescence. I call early adolescence the oasis. It's really, it's village and social oriented. And late adolescence, I call it cocoon because we go through this profound transformation analogous to what a caterpillar goes through on its way to becoming a moth or a butterfly. So the first thing that needs to happen for someone if they're in early adolescence is to complete the developmental task of that stage. And then I believe it's mystery that moves us into late adolescence or the cocoon. In other words, there's no human adult or elder who says, okay, I'm now graduating you into the cocoon. It's something that happens within our psyches. It's like we're initiated intrapsychically in a sense, or in our relationship to the larger world. And to get there, we need to complete the, or not complete, but to have enough success with the tasks of early adolescence. And that means creating a social presence that is both authentic and acceptable in at least one peer group. It might sound easy, but that's so hard, especially for people these days, in part because there's such an emphasis on conformity. And we have such a difficult time now even being present and attending to what is in front of us and around us that we have trouble being intimate with ourselves and just in terms of knowing our values and feelings and interests. And then there, again, there's this pressure to conform. So that's a lot of work, and it might sound daunting to some of our listeners, but what we discovered that if you have a decent map of human wholeness, which we don't find in contemporary Western culture, but I was able to develop by using the maps of nature itself, namely what we find in the four cardinal directions and the four seasons of the year and also the four times of day. If we use these natural maps or templates, we can map what are the facets of our human wholeness and develop them. And it turns out it doesn't take that long to do it. It's just that we don't have maps to help us. And that's one thing I've got in that book, Wild Mind. So that's the first thing that needs to happen, is developing these facets of wholeness and attending to our developmental needs. It doesn't, again, if you have good guidance, it doesn't take that long. And after some time, could be months or a couple years, depending on the person, mystery will toss your center of gravity over into the cocoon, which doesn't necessarily feel good. It's actually a challenging or even traumatic experience for people when we leave one stage of life and move into another. For example, everybody can remember what it was like to move from childhood to early adolescence, in other words, going through puberty. It's very disorienting. And we tend to really miss childhood. Well, the same thing that happens when a person moves from the oasis, which is early adolescence, to the cocoon, which is late adolescence, it's very disorienting, because what happens right there at the start of the cocoon is our identity as we've known it starts to crumble. It dissolves. Everything we thought we were and what we thought the world was and what we thought life was just crumbles. And if that happens for a person in the contemporary world who doesn't have guidance, either in the form of a book or an adult guide or an elder, it tends to be very frightening. And if that person would then go to most any psychotherapist or psychiatrist or religious pastor and so forth, they wouldn't understand what was going on, and they would probably attempt to abort the person's beginning initiation. That happens very commonly. So my answer to your question is, depends on what stage a person is in. If they're in the cocoon, then there's quite a number of practices that help them prepare for a descent to soul and to help amplify or even evoke the second phase of the descent, which is when our identity crumbles.
When we're in our adolescent phase, we tend to think that the world revolves around us and that we don't look through an empathetic lens enough. My experience has been a lot of people who get in touch with themselves as adults to try to become more evolved and quote-unquote better people can get stuck into that wormhole of navel-gazing when they're looking still at themselves so much, getting in touch with your breath in yoga, for example. These are important ways to build yourself. But what we try to teach teens, and hopefully they turn into fine, upstanding adults, is that caring for others gets you to that place of higher consciousness. Why don't you explain how your writings help people translate their self-actualization into helping the planet and helping others?
Yeah, good question. Well, it turns out, Alex, that the psycho-spiritual crisis that we're in contemporary societies is even worse than I've portrayed it so far. But we need a good diagnosis if you're going to have a successful intervention. So there's actually two kinds of early adolescence. There's an unhealthy kind and a healthy kind. The unhealthy kind I call egocentric or patho-adolescence. And unfortunately, there's a very large percentage of people in early adolescence, including teenagers, but also people much older, who are in a patho-adolescence. Again, it's because of how little support we get in our culture to really grow into our full humanness. And in patho-adolescence or egocentric adolescence, it's just what that word egocentric says, that the person is centered on themselves, which you could say selfish, as you did. The person is self-centered because they're stuck in an unhealthy stage of life, in this case, patho-adolescence. And a healthy early adolescent isn't self-centered at all. A healthy early adolescent is capable of empathy, of intimacy, of experiencing each one of their feelings as a treasure. There's no such thing as a toxic emotion to a healthy adolescent. Our emotions help guide us through our life.
So you think maybe we're setting the bar too low for our adolescents?
Well, we don't know how to help them. There's not enough educators, psychologists, adults, well, people in adult bodies anyways, and pastors and so forth, ministers, to support teenagers who are, most of whom are, a large percentage of whom are stuck in egocentric adolescence. There's not enough people to help support them develop their wholeness. Again, that's what I've outlined in my book, Wild Mind. And I didn't make up hardly any of the practices in that book. Again, they're drawn from what's available in our Western culture. It's just that people tend not to be steered towards the areas of development that are their greatest weaknesses, that they most need. So that's the problem with teens, is that they're not getting the kind of support, and they virtually never get that kind of support from their parents and teachers, because their parents and teachers didn't get that kind of support. And this goes back many, many, many generations. But the tools are available. And I've outlined those that are available in the Western world in my book, Wild Mind. And so the first order of business for teenagers, or really anybody stuck in an egocentric adolescence of any age, is to develop their wholeness and to attend to their earlier developmental needs so that they get into a healthy early adolescence. And then when the adolescent ego, which understands itself to be the center of its world, is reshaped by, you could say, the anima mundi, the soul of the world, into an adult ego who understands its place in the larger earth community, the larger web of life, and has developed cultivated the tools, the powers to be able to embody that place, that gift for not just the human realm, but the greater earth community.
It'll be okay on the healing day. No more going astray on the healing day. Yeah, we'll find our way on the healing day, to where the children play on the healing day.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to author Bill Plotkin. His latest book is called The Journey of Soul Initiation, a field guide for visionaries, evolutionaries, and revolutionaries. So, Bill, you mentioned the descent to soul, this concept. It sounds a little ominous, but it's anything but that. Can you expand on it a little bit? I don't quite understand the idea, and I'd like to be able to explain it to others.
Sure. The descent to soul is the core psycho-spiritual adventure that happens during the journey of soul initiation. There's many things that happen during the journey, but it's the descent to soul experience that results in soul encounter and the metamorphosis of the ego that follows from that. And a descent to soul can happen more than once during the journey, but it has to happen at least once, and it can happen one or more times after the journey, which is to say during adulthood.
So much of psycho-spiritual transformation has been embraced by white middle-class America. How do you want to see these ideas perpetuated throughout all levels of our socioeconomic classes and for all races. And
I guess that's one of the challenges of this, for lack of a better word, the spiritual transformation industry, is that it tends to be a little self-perpetuating, and that, you know, it's a lot of word of mouth. But the ideas are very universal. How do you get these ideas to everyone?
Yeah, really good question. So this, what I'm talking about, might appeal to, you know, white middle-class people, because it, in some ways it would appeal to anybody, because there's some place in us that we can touch, that we know that the way we're living our life, both individually and collectively, this is not what is meant for us humans. This is not a mature way to live. The way we're destroying life on the planet is not something a mature human species would be doing. And we recognize this on some level, and there's something in all of us that longs for a deeper connection to the world. And so when people like me or anybody else uses words like purpose and meaning, there's something in just about everybody that perks up and goes, yes, that's what I want. But unfortunately, most people are understanding that in an early adolescent way. And the journey of soul initiation, again, it's something different that really can't be understood by someone in early adolescence. But still, it speaks to us. It appeals to us in some way. So back to this other aspect of your question, how can we create processes of soul initiation that are fitting and accessible to people of any race, class, gender orientation, et cetera, et cetera? And what we needs to happen, of course, is that there needs to be people in each of those classes or categories or identity realms who have been through the journey of soul initiation and have been called in their own way to be guides of this kind of process, which would be a very small percentage of initiated adults. But one thing an initiated adult might be called to is guiding this journey of soul initiation. And each person who is so called needs to find their way, their language, their set of practices that would appeal to the people in their subculture, let's call it, who are actually ready for the journey. And again, most of the people in any community aren't going to be ready. But for those who are, we need practices that fit the particular language, idioms, styles, so forth, of that group.
Well, the book is called The Journey of Soul Initiation, Bill Plotkin. Bill, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Herbie Mann and Bill Fay. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.